Hey, thanks for tuning into QS Cast this week. We have a lot of great spoilers to talk about. We have finally seen a bunch of mythics now. We have the two planeswalkers that we can expect, and we have a bunch of other things to talk about. None of them really look too bad, so we have a packed show today to talk about a bunch of new rares. The first thing we want to talk about, let's start on a high note here. I mean, there's just so many other great things around here, but let's start on Arlan Cord. She was just spoiled. It's two, a red and a green. She's a planeswalker, three loyalty. You can plus one to give up to one target creature, plus two, vigilance and haste. You can pay zero loyalty to put a green wolf creature into token and transform her. So when she transforms, you can also plus her. Creatures you control get plus one and gain trample until end of turn. You can minus one her to have her werewolf form deal three damage to a creature or player and then transform her back into human form. Or you can ultimate for negative six. You get an emblem that says creatures you control gain tap. This creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player. So I'll say one thing right now. You cannot transform it and then use the transformed side in the same turn, because this goes back to Garrick from original Innistrad. And so you can't double dip. But even if you're only using one of these abilities each turn, it's crazy. I want to throw it to you, Chaz. What do you think about Arlan Cord?
I'm super excited, and I love green. I always have. I love this planeswalker.
And you know, this is like the Huntmaster of the Fells of the set.
It's literally got everything you could like want to do in a green planeswalker, and I guess red too. I mean, it's just doing so much stuff, and it's interesting because it comes in a time where a fellow writer, Brian DeMars on the site, just was talking about Garruk Relentless. So, you know, because of the change in the flip side, and now, you know, you don't have to just, you know, blow up a ratchet bomb on zero to stop flip cards. So now I'm just starting to think, like, is this just straight up better than Garruk Relentless? I mean, you don't have to fight anything to kill anything. It pseudo protects itself. I mean, it's just doing so much stuff. I mean, just thinking about modern, I mean, we know for CMC planeswalkers are either a hit or miss in that format, but it just seems like you drop a Loxodon Smiter or something like that before Arlan Cord, you use her plus one, you know, you got a 6/6 vigilance, you know, giant creature coming, or you just, you know, throw down to zero, you get a 2/2 wolf for your trouble, and then you got the Embrace by the Moon side, the flip side, and you can lightning bolt something, because it not only can hit creatures and it can hit players too. So it's just, I'm so excited. $30 might be a lot for this walker, so I might say to err and, you know, sit back and wait and see, because I just don't think this is like a Jace Vryn's Prodigy like price tag. Like, this is not going to be like a $70-$80 planeswalker. So I would just wait. It's still a super good card, but you could save yourself, you know, a few bucks by waiting.
So I think this thing's going to end up parked at 30 for a long time. Another thing I want to bring up for people, even though it has a different name when it is flipped, you cannot have both an Arlan Cord and an Arlan Embraced by the Moon out in play at the same time, because they are both Planeswalker subtype Arlan.
Yeah.
Just like when you flip Jace into, and you have Jace, Architect of Thought out, you got to choose one and then the other dies. You know, I was thinking about this, Chaz, about, you know, the Gideon phenomenon of, can you run four of these? And you certainly, you can run four. I mean, the downside is that you might just turn it into a 2/2 wolf. Whereas if you drew the second Gideon, you could always turn your first one into an emblem and then play the next one and start cashing it in for now three knight tokens.
Right.
So that does stand in the way. There's no great cash out on this card like Gideon had.
Yeah, there's no real easy way to get rid of it. Like, you know, you have Gideon basically just doing away with itself to leave you an emblem. I mean, Arlan Cord conceivably could stick around for a little while. And just another thing to add, the front side is whatever, you know, the loyalty on that side is what you get on the flip side, just so to, you know, if anyone was confused. So if you have three, you know, you use the zero to transform, you still have three on the other side. So. Just like Garruk Relentless. But, yeah, I mean, maybe it could stick around 30. I think it could dip a little lower just because, I mean, I was just telling Kelly before the in the pre-show, there's just a ton of stuff in this set that's pretty good. I mean, nothing's real, like, there's a lot of solid cards, and there's not really, like, any dogs. Like, there's, well, there's the Wolf of Devil's Breach, but, there's no real, like,
literal dogs.
Yeah, there's, like, literal dogs, but there's no, like, terrible, terrible, terrible cards where you, like, sit down and look like, this is just straight up awful. Maybe, like, Nephalia Moondrakes, but that's it. So, you know, maybe this could come down a little bit just because the set is just jam-packed full of stuff. I don't know if you want – you sounded like you wanted to jump in, Kelly.
No, I was laughing at your dog joke. but I agree with most of what's been said about the new Werewolf Planeswalker. I'm really trying to figure out what the line of play looks like to optimize this card's value. I think trying to compare it to something like Gideon is – I wouldn't compare it to Gideon because most Planeswalkers don't have an ultimate that kills them the same turn they come down. But in this case, you're looking at relatively low loyalty for four starting mana cost. So you got to think about what are you really trying to do with this? If you're in an aggro deck, then her plus one goes ahead and kind of protects herself, protects you, and lets you turn whatever your two or three drop was into a proper threat. The turn it comes down, I don't know. I see you have to really bounce between the two modes very smartly. This is a thinking person's magic card because the front side, the daytime side, the plus one makes one creature way better. And on the reverse side, the plus one makes all your creatures a little bit better. So if you have a deck that doesn't have a ton of creatures on the board, you want to keep her from transforming until you're ready to use the emblem. Now that emblem is super crazy good. It doesn't win you the game outright, but the fact that no matter what happens, every creature you have basically comes down and hits your opponent for however much its power is unblockable. I'm pretty impressed with that. So it's tough to compare that to like make a wolf lightning bolt you, make a wolf lightning bolt you, which you can do back and forth, what, three times now. It's just, there's so many lines of play here that I don't know where to start other than I'm hesitant to put four of them in a deck because additional copies are pretty, pretty terrible. So I don't know. It has to be in a deck that can make maximum usage of both of its plus one modes.
Yeah, I think that the line of play is you make a wolf, you flip it, and then the next turn you lightning bolt, flip it back, make a wolf the third turn, flip it, and then start plus one-ing, because then your wolves are 3/3 and trample. But
right.
You know, that's in a vacuum, that's what I would be doing with it.
Yeah, and that's like if you just had Arlen Court. I mean, now you are looking at a landscape in April where you have some pretty good like supporting cast here. You have Nissa before this card, conceivably. You know, you play Nissa before that. You have a bunch of plants and wolves, and then you just start, you know, using Nissa and Arlen to just keep buffing that squad. So you can use that line too. You can just use 0+1 with that squad. Or now you're dipping into the colors of maybe you trying to get like a Naya color thing going where you got Nissa, Arlen Cord, and Gideon at four. And now you're just basically making a squad, and then you can get rid of Gideon and make an emblem. So Arlen's wolves and Nissa's plants stick around and they're bigger. You know, now you have so much stuff to do.
I think you nailed it with Nissa here. I think that's kind of the missing link because she fills out all the roles that Arlen is looking for, are you going to have a creature on the board for the +2/+2 vigilance and hasting? This way you can chump block with a plant. Then Nissa can make a new one on your fourth turn and Arlen can give that thing haste and boost it. So that's probably the thing you want to curve into most. I don't know if I want to try to put this in a deck with double white cost Gideon.
Right.
I don't know what our mana bases are going to look like yet, but I don't think they're going to be the free roll that we're used to.
I'll tell you, double white might be tough, but I'll tell you, Oath of Gideon seems a lot better just with a single white. I think this
Oath of Gideon is an amazing card.
Oath of Gideon is just getting more and more of a, you know, a reason to be played.
Well, if you want to go down that route, though, then you could theoretically start playing more of the Oaths as well. I think Oath of Chandra is not really a playable card, but I think Oath of Nissa is, I don't like that card as much as some people do, but the printing of another green Planeswalker really makes Oath of Nissa a little more interesting.
Yeah. And it solves your double white.
It does. It does. And then you're relying on Oath of Nyssa to cast your Gideons. And the problem here is that, like, Gideon is just so good. You don't right. want to play any less than four of them. And you just, like, I would rather, right. here's the question. Would you rather play a deck if you couldn't play both? Would you rather play Arlen or Gideon? Which is the better card?
I think maybe it's just because I think Gideon, it was just so super pushed, but I think Gideon overall is the better card. But
gotcha. Why? What makes you think
so? I think it's because he's more self-sustaining and he doesn't really need any other card to like fill in any gaps. He kind of just fills in all his own gaps and he can get rid of himself to make way for new copies of himself. He's really like a planeswalker that you could just always conceivably play for no matter what. Like yeah, this, absolutely. Like, you know, Arlen, you draw another card, you know, copy of Arlen, if this is kind of just sticking around still, because it is a good walker to protect itself. So, you know, then it's kind of just stuck in your hand and, you know, you just, it gets a little awkward. But Gideon, I mean, you could just free roll four copies, never have to worry about it. Doesn't need any other cards to be good. Right. He just kind of does his own thing.
Well, I want to shift from Arlen here, which is awesome, to Nahiri. Yeah. Which is real disappointing. She's pre-selling for $20, 10 less than Arlen, and I think yeah. that gap's gonna get wider. She's two, a red and a white. You know, reminds you of a Johnny Vengeant, who is an amazing card for that cost. Plus two, you can discard a card if you do draw a card. She starts with four loyalty, so you can conceivably roll her up to six. Minus two, exile target enchantment, tapped artifact, or tapped creature. So, you know, it has a little bit of protection built in. Negative eight, search your library for an artifact or creature card, put it onto the battlefield, shuffle your library, it gains haste, return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. So Nahiri pumps up for two turns and then goes finds Emrakul and you smash your opponent with it. That's kind of what I see it as doing. It has two suspend counters and it says, get Emrakul from your library and attack once. She does act as a reusable madness mechanism with her plus two ability, but this just, I was hoping for so much more. What do you guys think about this?
I think people are underselling this card. I don't agree with the $20 pre-order price. That's probably too high because this isn't Gideon. This isn't Arlen Cord. It's a totally different card though, because plus two is so much different than plus one. And, you have to look at the fact that it's giving you card selection. It's giving you a madness and delirium outlet, like the ability to put any card you want into your graveyard from your hand and then replace it with a brand new card is, you know, I wish they had just made this normal loot, draw first, then discard, but, they didn't, and that sucks. So the point is that the minus two is like, how are people just sleeping on this minus two? It kills so many things. Like, it kills any enchantment. Most creatures, you know, people are going to attack with their creatures, and if they don't, then just the presence of her minus two acts as a deterrent. And that's something that I try to teach newer players when I'm talking about basic combat math and activated abilities and not walking into onboard tricks, is that you don't need to activate an ability in order to get value out of its existence. And that's what's going on with Nahiri, is that you're ticking her up and you're ticking her up. And if your opponent starts trying to attack her, well, you're going to need to block to keep her alive. But remember, she comes down turn zero. She goes up to six. Second turn, she's out. Turn one, she's at eight. Third turn, she's out. Your opponent's getting attacked with Ulamog or whatever the, you know, monster du jour might be. And that minus eight might not be game winning, but remember, it puts it back into your hand. So there is ostensibly the ability to cast it again later. I mean, I don't think this card is on the same tier as the other four drop planeswalkers we're talking about, but people calling it, like you, Doug, disappointing. I mean, yeah, maybe it's a little disappointing, but I think it's being undersold dramatically. That minus two, remember, that minus two is a deterrent. And as soon as she comes out, she's at six, which means you get three activations yeah. of what I would consider a premium removal spell for four mana and one card. I mean, it can do a lot. And I think that this is one of those cards where I'm going to try to brew around a deck that has four of them. And I'm going to stick it in a deck with tons of delirium and tons of madness because I want to just saturate that plus two with value. And you know, you don't have to cash her in when she hits eight. You can take her up to 10. And remember, if they want to start killing her, they have to start turning their creatures sideways. And if they turn their creatures sideways, she kills them. And she's going to have so much loyalty that she can probably even take one attack. So again, I think that there's more to this card than meets the eye. I don't think it's the next $50 Planeswalker. It's not
right.
Gideon level, but I don't know.
It's not even like a Shawnee Benjamin level, but I'm leaning towards what you're saying, Kelly. I think it's being undersold. I don't agree with the $20 pre-order price, that's for sure. I don't think it's quite that good in terms of a price, so I would stay away from it. Like, exactly like you said. Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Without unproven, $20 is just a lot for me to want to shell out for a card like this.
To go back to what you said about Gideon, like, she can very easily cash herself in for value. I mean,
right.
How much mana are you willing to pay for put anything from your deck into play with haste and then put it back into your hand? I mean, you're getting your card back. You're getting more than your mana's worth. And you've probably caused some trouble for your opponent in the interim. So,
right. Again,
like, it's one of those things where I'm holding off judgment until I can actually sleeve this thing up and smash people with it. But yeah, I need to try.
Yeah, I'm not super disappointed. I think it's a pretty decent Planeswalker, in all honesty. I'm leaning towards what you're saying, Kelly. And you have to remember, like, again, what is around these cards? Is it a modern staple? Likely not, but... You know, when you have to evaluate these cards and you have to kind of, again, look at the landscape, look what's around this card. Like, again, we come back to Oath of Gideon. Like, how much better is this card after an Oath of Gideon? Like, you play Oath of on 3, this goes to 5 loyalty when it comes into play. You have two little dinky, tokens to block with. And the -2 is actually, I think people are glossing over the fact that it's exile. Which might be very, a premium, removal, come this April. Like, it deals with.
Don't turn on your opponent's delirium.
Right. Don't turn on your opponent's delirium. It kind of gets you out of a jam with Ulamog, Ulamog, if it comes down to it. So, it does get rid of some pesky stuff. And again, this +2 is like, so much better than what we've been used to. Like, you look back at Tybalt and, people just cringe. Yeah. This, you have a little bit of flexibility on what you want to get rid of and what you get back.
Yeah, unfortunately, it does nothing if you're out of cards in your hand.
Right.
I guess I like that she can discard extra copies of herself that you draw.
Yes.
And Kelly, you make a good point that, I mean, so when I read that second ability, I read exile target enchantment or tap creature. I don't think it's ever going to hit an artifact because the two kinds of artifacts that get played are mana rocks and equipment, and equipment never taps. And mana rocks, I mean, we have magnifying glass and we have like Tamiyo's journal. And
yeah,
those are both
you got brain in a jar.
Yeah, and brain in a jar. They all have instant speed activation, so you can just park that thing and use it in your opponent's end step, and then they'll never be able to hit it with Nahiri.
Right. But yeah, I mean, it's not terrible by any means. It's no Ajani Vengeant, which I always look back to as like the quintessential Boros Walker.
Yeah, that guy was a little too good.
Yeah. So, but I mean, to be fair, it was the first set for Mythics, and so.
So we talked about exiling. Another card that exiles is super hyped. It's Anguish Unmaking. It's a black mana, a white mana, instant. Exile target non-land permanent. You lose 3 life. So it's utter end. But instead of paying an extra mana, you shave off a mana and your opponent gets to lava spike you.
I had to come in and put down Avacyn Hard.
Yeah, my initial thoughts about that is it's an event deck card, or it's a promotional card, right?
It's a game day top 8.
So it does have a few extra copies.
It's like Utter End, right?
The art's pretty cool on the game day one because it's like a different perspective.
So good.
This I see being people are kind of down on it, and I understand. I guess you look at it like it's a Hero's Downfall, which was a banner card at that time. It was a 3 mana removal spell. This is Hero's Downfall plus and minus. It's Ruinous Path is a sorcery, and it does not get a whole lot of play at all, even though it has that little bit of upside built in with the Awaken. I look at this and I think if you're playing black white, you have Shambling Vent. So the life loss doesn't really bother me.
Nope.
I could see something using, for example, Shambling Vent, Anguished Unmaking, and our green creature that I want to call Sylvan Advocate that pumps lands if you have 6 or more out, and I don't believe that that's the actual name.
You also, the 3 life, the loss of 3 life, just looking at that, a lot, it might be obscure, but it actually gives you a good reason to play Linvala.
You're right. I mean, Linvala gets really good.
You know,
with
a
this.
Few of those over the course of the game, then you just drop a Linvala later on. You get to recoup that life and hopefully get a 3-3. I mean, so, you know, does this make Linvala so much better? Maybe, but it does give, you know, it does let us look at Linvala again to kind of reevaluate that card. Cause like you, again, you were saying this before the cast, Kelly, Othic Gatewatch just came and went. So now's the time to really evaluate those cards and pick them up if you need to.
Yeah, and Kate Koilos is in Magic Origins, so we're going to have the black-white pain land. There's going to be plenty of ways to activate. Between this and Linvala, I think, and Caves, I think there are plenty of ways to activate Linvala.
Right.
And that's pretty cool. I mean, it's nice to see that deck sort of come together.
Yeah, I mean, black-white is definitely a good place to be come rotation. I mean, it's gonna have so much stuff.
So we've seen a few mythics in here. Some of them are awesome. I mean, Relentless Dead is a pretty sweet mythic. That's the zombie that never stops coming back. We've seen Avacyn, and that's again pretty cool. Geralt's Masterpiece is the 7/7 flyer that gets -1/-1 for each card in your hand. You can pay 3 and a blue, discard 3 cards to return it from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So it doesn't go away, but you have to pay a serious cost for it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm kind of the thrust of what I'm getting at is whether you guys feel like the mythics in this are great. And the one thing I'll note is that, like, Startled Awake, which is 2 blue-blue, and your opponent mills the top 13 cards of their graveyard,
super cool.
Their library, or they exile it, and then you can pay 3 blue-blue. It's kind of a confusing card. You should read it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But you can put it into a 1/1 creature that has Skulk, and when it hits, you can return it to your hand and cast Startled Awake again. This is a card, is a mythic that I think it's only a mythic because this ability at rare is really crazy in drafts. But Startled Awake is a card that if you had that pop up in too many drafts, it gets real, real scary.
Yeah.
So they only want a few drafts being ruined by Startled Awake. So I understand that it's like this tension, right? Because we want cool mythics,
right.
But the mythic rarity was also created in part to limit the effect of hyper-powerful rares in draft. So that they can continue to print good things, but they affect, you know, half the drafts that they would have otherwise. Then we have a mythic rare Wrath of God for 6 mana that exiles all creatures, and if you have Delirium, you make a 4/4 white angel. I mean, I guess it depends on how good the exile is versus just destroying stuff.
Mm.
And then there's Wolf of Devil's Breach. This is another guy I wanted to talk about in a moment here. But it's 3 red-red for a 5/5. It does not have haste. Everybody will think it has haste. When you attack with it, you can pay 1 and a red and discard a card. If you do, it deals damage equal to the target creature planeswalker equal to the discarded card's converted mana cost. So before we talk about that, Wolf, do you guys feel like we are getting good mythics here?
I think so. There's not really any one mythic and you look at it and it's like, this is really bad. Like, you could definitely make... There's definitely a crowd or a use for all of these mythics. I feel like we're getting some pretty good stuff at the mythic level.
I agree. I think they did, like, you're right that Startled Awake is the kind of card that really can't be a rare because
right.
I'm pretty sure that I think that's the first pick in drafts, by the way, because if you get this off twice, you win. Because there's 40 card deck minus the starting 7 is 33. Hitting with this twice is 26, and that means that they are dead on turn 6 if you cast this flip it, etc. Like, you can't actually kill somebody on turn 6 with this because of the mana requirements, but like, mill 13, then mill 13 again, game's over in limited. So, it's actually a pretty cool rare. I've never seen them do anything remotely like this, and it's just absolutely brilliant. Brilliant design.
I tweeted out, like,
Devil's Breach is I'm not that impressed.
You know,
this is
a card that got worse after I actually read the card. So
wait,
what it doesn't say is deal damage to a player. So,
right.
So I was thinking, like, wow, Wolf of Devil's Breach. I attack. I discard Boom Bust and I do 8 damage to my opponent and then he takes another 5. And that in fact is not how it works. It only deals damage to creatures and planeswalkers. So there's nothing where you're like, I have Blasphemous Act. And I'm gonna kill you with a Wolf of Devil's Breach and a Blasphemous Act, and it's gonna be crazy.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly why they did it that way. And it's like, you don't even get to do it. You don't even get to do it for free. You have to pay mana. I think this is a dog of mythic. Sorry, Chaz.
A literal dog. Yeah, it's
beyond good that.
Before you read it.
Okay. Okay. This is That could be this is the actual dog.
So I want to move on to another card here.
I'm not sure about
moving from crummy big red cards to tiny red cards is Falcon Wrath Gorger. It's a 2/1 for one red mana, but wait, there's more. It gives all the vampires in your hand a madness with the madness cost equal to their casting cost. So I just kind of put my thumb over the text box because there's nothing bad in there. There's no like Fire Drink or Satyr crappy, terrible drawbacks to it. And I think red has finally gotten a Savannah Lions. And, this is phenomenal. What do you think about this card?
I don't know why they...
I don't even know what to say. Like, I have now lived long enough to see, like, Jackal Pup become completely obsolete.
I know, this is one of those funny cards, and I'll say that part of the influence on this, I think, and one of the interesting things about this is that R&D loves playing Cube, and they for whatever reason, like to always try and push the red deck, especially on Magic Online. And so the red deck can either be, like, great or terrible, but there are so many 2/1 creatures in red for one red mana that they'll take out like Jackal Pup and put in Goblin Patrol, and it's not an actual functional change. You know, so you can make a deck with 16 one drop red creatures and still have the same deck over and over. And I feel like this was one of them being like, man, I like the effect of Jackal Pup in my own cube, but I don't really like the drawback and I want to cut it, but I still want a slot for this. Let's invent this creature for it. That's a Savannah Lions. Red needs a Savannah Lions.
So, like, now you can – this is so crazy. So we were talking – I think we were talking last time about Incorrigible Youths and Heir of Falcon Wrath and, like, what's going to be the one drop.
And Ravenous Bloodseeker, yeah.
Right. So now you can do a line of play of Vampire Glutton, Heir of Falcon Wrath, and turn three, you Madness Indrana, and you're good to go. Like
madnessing and Drana. Oh, Drana seems like a great
I had never considered
right
that
now,
you could.
Oh my!
Oh, wow.
This is like how did this get like? This is so good. Like it even if there was like really no vampires worthy of like putting in madness, like it's just like just free. It's totally free. It's
yeah, and
so
the fact
great.
That like Ravenous Bloodseeker, the 1/3 that gets +2/-2 when you
yeah,
like. Okay, I'm gonna cast one, and then I'm gonna pump this guy and just cast another one. And
you can
it.
Now, and still on turn three, you can go Vampire Glutton, Heir of Falcon Wrath. You can discard the 1/3 guy. Oh yeah, you can only discard once. Okay, so but I was gonna say then you have enough to Madness Fiery Temper. But yeah, okay, you can only discard once.
So still, I don't think you noticed is that Kalidus is a vampire. Well, and he's one of the best creatures in the format.
And I would like to also observe to everybody, in a page from Luis Scott Vargas here, is that Incorrigible Youths now also gets Madness 3 red-red instead of just Madness 2 red.
Oh, okay.
If you have reason to spend 5 mana for whatever reason, you can give that guy Madness twice. I'm looking forward to seeing that picture on Magic Online with that card. What a crazy card. So this is my other thought about that. Is that in the first few weeks of every format, there is a mono-red or nearly mono-red deck that comes up. And typically it's things like Rakdos Cackler, stuff like that. There's some uncommons to pad it out. And it ends up being a very cheap deck. Falcon Wrath Gorger is a rare. It's really good, and I think it's going to be a bedrock of these kinds of decks. And we don't have a presale price for it yet. We will very soon. But I'm guessing that if there's support for this as a mono red deck, that this is a card that's going to be a great $5 pickup. I mean, which is to say, if you pick it up for under $5, I think it will reach $5.
So let's talk about less obvious pickups because this card is not going to start cheap. There's no way. Let's talk about cards like Drana, which might actually be the actionable here. Because I just did a quick search of all the vampires that are in standard. That aren't in Shadows, and the only two that really look good are Drana and Kalidus, both of which cost double black.
Yeah, I guess.
What do you guys think about that?
I guess I recognize that black red could be a deck, but the only land we have for that is the Black Red Tap lands. We have Battle for Zendikar tap land, and then the rare one whose name escapes me right now, the Czech land. So we don't have a pain land, and I think it's a little risky to hope for a red black deck because we don't have the mana base for it. We don't unfortunately either have great support in blue, so it's unlikely that you could do a red blue vampires right now because it doesn't seem like they've given any madness to blue at this point. Well, I guess there's just
vampires.
And that gives you Shivan Reef and Wandering Fumarole.
You can't just write off a black-red archetype because we're being spoiled here with our mana bases as they are right now. You can't write off an archetype because the mana fixing isn't great. Like, you could play black-red and just play all basics. And
straight up, you just go the mountain double swamp. Don't you still have, Terra Morphic Expanse?
That card's garbage. Right? Well, the line of play you have is Mountain Swamp Cinderglade.
Ooh, yes.
Not Cinderglade. Yep, what's the name?
Smoldering Marsh. Smoldering Marsh.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like this mana base is not this crazy intractable world. We don't have Trilands. We're going to be playing four copies of the BFZ duels now, as opposed to the one for fetching. That's the way they were printed to, you know. That's what's supposed to be happening here, not fetches and craziness like this. So there's no reason that we should consider an archetype hindered for lack of mana base. Like, do I want another ally color dual land cycle? Sure, but like, to be fair, they did just give us one. We can play four of those. And like, if we really, really have to, we can play just bad cards like the ally color come into play tapped dual lands. But I mean, if you're only playing two colors, you can get away with playing four of the BFZ duels and very little else. Like, your mana base won't be perfect, but it will be playable. So, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. It definitely puts a lot of pressure on decks to get their mana curves right, but there's certainly no reason to write off an entire color pair or, you know, an entire set of color pairs because the mana is not going to be as good. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think Drana is an incredible card. We're waiting for Siege Rhino to leave. The one problem with Drana is that she dies to Fiery Temper, which I expect to be absolutely everywhere in Standard.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though.
Yes.
I know you brought up.
Super, yeah. So.
You brought up Drana. The spread has been declining steadily. I mean, it's getting towards the low 20 spread. I mean, you got buy lists up to $5-6. So clearly vendors think they'll be needing them here soon.
Yeah, that's true.
I would be shocked if they didn't.
One thing that we haven't really seen in this set so far is the quality of the uncommons and the commons. And what made original Innistrad so fun was just like all the power that was in the non-rare area. And when I look back and think power uncommons recently, I mean, Zulaport Cutthroat and Catacomb Sifter are two great uncommons, Reflector Mage, but the
become immense.
Yeah, I guess as a factor that we haven't seen a whole lot of commons uncommons, period. But I'm really hoping we see good push two color cards and flip cards. I guess Ravenous Bloodseeker, which is the Madness Vampire, is an incredible uncommon. But the other one I'm keeping my eye on is a common Hinterland Logger. It's 2/1 for one and a green. At the beginning of each upkeep, if no spells were cast last turn, transform it. And it becomes a 4/2 trample where if somebody casts two spells, it flips back.
Hinterland Logger is crazy and limited. I think you're dead on there because if your opponent misses their 2-drop and you have a 2-drop, you're especially whether or not you're on the play or draw, like you're winning the game if your opponent misses their 2-drop and you have one. If you're on the play and they're missing their 2-drop, turns your 2/1 into a 4/2 with trample. They're so far behind already. Like,
they're taking
so much extra damage because of that trample too. So, leave it to somebody who's at the peak of the game, like Owen, to take a card that looks boring and vanilla like this and call it pushed. Other awesome uncommons, like Incorrigible Youths, I think also very, very, very good uncommon. Poppelgeist, Invasive Surgery. I haven't seen anything on that level of like Become Immense or Reflector Mage that makes me go, this is an uncommon that they could have printed it rare without upsetting anybody. I think it's cute that they reprinted a bad version of Delver also just show us, like, hey, look, 3/2 of flying, you're supposed to cost 4. Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty amusing that they had that callback.
I mean, I got to get one for my cube because it's funny. But, like, you know what I actually think is very underrated that people are not paying attention to, and I think it's because on the spoiler page there's a big glare in the text box and you can't really read it, is Pack Guardian, which is a 4/3 wolf spirit creature for green 2 with flash. And when it enters the battlefield, you can pitch a land from your hand to make a 2/2 token. So that's 6 power for 4 mana on your opponent's end step during combat, whatever. And it lets you turn extra lands into delirium triggers, which is probably going, not triggers, but delirium counts. It's probably going to be very important to be able to do that when we lose fetch lands. So that's one of those uncommons where I don't know if anyone's giving it. No one's looking at this and going, that's 6 power for 4 mana at instant speed.
Yeah, I know someone was glazing over. This was, again, one of the earlier ones we got, a huge glare on it. We don't have the actual text, but you could pretty much make it out as the Duskwatch Recruiter, the one generic and a green, the 2/2. You can kind of look at the top 3 cards. If you get a creature, you put it in your hand, and then you still have the werewolf flip. And it basically just gives you your creatures one less to cast. I mean, that's still pretty good for an uncommon.
Yeah.
I like the Pack Guardian too, and this was just recently spoiled, and again, we were talking about, like, an aggressive list. You have the Neglected Heirloom. I mean, you can now have the 2, you can have 4 one-drops in the Vampire Glutton and Neglected Heirloom, so whether you play one or the other, you can go Neglected Heirloom into Heir of Falcon Wrath, and then turn 3, you got yourself a 6/4 with Flying and First Strike.
Wow. That is a pretty robust curve.
Yeah, you get to discard, and you still get to discard, like a, you know, Fiery Temper. Oh no, yeah, you still get to discard like a Fiery Temper. Because there's no, you don't have to do anything for Neglected Heirloom to flip, you just need to flip it.
So. The fact that Heir of Falcon Wrath flips without mana is pretty,
yeah, I mean, it's
pretty crazy.
Kinda crazy, yeah.
Yeah, I think you actually nailed it. Duskwatch Recruiter is a card that I kind of forgot about because it's, I mean, it's a 2/2 for 2 that turns into a 3/3. And the part I love is that I'm thinking back to all the Innistrad draft. I drafted Innistrad like crazy when it first came out, and I played like crazy during that period.
Yeah.
And the thing that you must remember about these werewolf cards is that you need to find ways to use your mana to the max.
Yep.
Without casting spells. And Duskwatch Recruiter does that perfectly. Because spending 3 mana to essentially draw a card and flip your Duskwatch Recruiter seems amazing. And then, interestingly enough, if you need that ability, again, if your hand is full of creatures, creatures costing 1 less to cast means it's much easier to flip it back. Because you can cast 2 creature spells in a turn much, much easier than normal.
Yeah, I can't.
And you're only... Go ahead.
Yeah, I said I can't remember who it was, but I know one of the... semi-pro or definitely pro players were making a case for this card in like collected company lists, like this along with collected company. So you have yourself a nice little engine where if you're not getting collected company, you're getting something like this.
Yeah, if you collected company into that on somebody's end step and then you untap, you can just plow mana into its ability and auto flip it. So that's interesting. I don't know if it makes the cut into Coco lists, but it's definitely something worth, you know, somebody's past it.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't seen so far a great payoff for getting clue tokens, and I talked about Tamiya's Journal a while back. I'm pretty excited about that as a casual card, but we haven't seen a real glue that binds some of the great clues together, and I'm kind of ignoring that you can sacrifice them to draw a card because that's not a great rate for an ability tacked onto a spell. So I want to see something a little better than that. We also haven't seen really anything more with Devils. We saw Devils play, and I don't know if that's just kind of a one-off card or whether that's going to be a sub-theme, but it's just
got a couple.
Not present on any of these other cards.
We've got Devils Playground at 6 mana that makes 4 1/1s, and then we've got Dance with Devils, which is red 3 instant. You get 2 1/1s that ping anything when they die. But beyond that, yeah, I don't think that we've seen a third card. I imagine that since they've printed an uncommon and a rare, we're going to see a few more. But I don't know. we're used to paying one mana for cards like this. Goblin Arsonist is the card that comes to mind here. And I don't really want to pay four mana for a pair of 1/1s, even if they do damage to something when they die. So unless they start pushing these little devil tokens, I'm not too impressed.
The other thing I want to point out is that there's a real lack of inexpensive removal. Our removal spells are kind of are 3 mana or more, so there's To the Slaughter, there's some other cards we've talked about. Declaration in Stone is a 2-drop, 1 and a white, exile creature, and everything else with the same name. That player gets a clue token for every non-token creature exiled this way. So that is slightly cheaper removal, but again, it's a sorcery speed one. I don't ever see myself using that on my own guys. So I'm going to say that I think Anguished Unmaking and cards like To the Slaughter, which is a 3-mana Diabolic Edict that can also kill a Planeswalker. I think those cards are that you're going to have to pay 3 mana to kill a creature, which makes me again think that the fast mana guys like Falconwrath Gorger or 2/1 Savannah Lions are going to be more powerful, because by the time you get to the point where you're casting To the Slaughter, or Foul Tongue Invocation for that matter, your opponent may already have 3 guys out.
Yeah. That's one of the big drawbacks of To the Slaughter is that it's, until you start firing it off with Delirium, it's probably subpar removal. Especially, there's just like, there's a lot of inexpensive creatures. Like, you don't want to be casting To the Slaughter against a player with Relentless Dead on the board, you know?
Start You're packing not. Those Declaration in Stone and Silk Wraps, people.
Jazz, are you more enthusiastic about Declaration of Stone?
I think it's like almost a necessity. Like, you almost have to play it because you just have to almost.
Yeah, and Silk Wrap is a standard.
Premium. What?
Silk Wrap will still be in standard. It's a Dragons of Tarkir card, but unfortunately can't nail it in Corrigible Youths.
Right, so, you know, here comes an in-steps Declaration in Stone. I mean, for the stuff, for the cards that you're likely removing with Declaration in Stone, I think I might be okay with them drawing a card at some point later in the game. So.
It's not that they just draw the card. They have to spend mana to draw the card. So it's, I don't know. Declaration in Stone is one of those things where I'm real curious to see how it's, I don't want to put it in any of my decks, but I may end up doing so before, before the Pro Tour is here.
Like I said, it might be one of those necessary evils.
Yeah, I'm going to be testing a lot with probably looking at the dearth of, like, cheap removal. I think my brewing focus is going to start with a red-based Madness deck, just because Ravenous Bloodseeker and Heir of Falconwrath into Fiery Temper seems amazing. Like, Jace seems great, too, to trigger Madness, but I think I'd rather be attacking for 3 and casting Lightning Bolts than just looting and casting Lightning Bolts and playing a control game, because I just don't, I see that the aggressive cards here, they're just stacking them up one after the other. It curves out perfectly. Like, Chaz, what you just explained with that 1-2-3 curve is perfect. And Fiery Temper, I'm looking at cards, like even cards like if Pact Guardian becomes an important card in the format, like Fiery Temper can kill that as well. So looking at things that don't die to Fiery Temper might be a good way to decide how to build a less aggressive deck. Because if you're playing aggro, then most of your stuff, like Incorrigible Youths, Heir of Falconwrath, it's all going to die to Fiery Temper anyway. I just think that being a Madness Lightning Bolt is going to just define the format. Yeah. There's so much that it kills. It kills just about everything you want to kill.
The nuts draw would be, like, obviously, this is like Christmas land, but like the nuts draw in this, like where I'm seeing this black red, like aggressive madness list is you go the 2/1 vampire, the glutton, then you go Heir of Falconwrath, discard Heir of Falconwrath, and then discard Drana. So that would be like a sweet, like first 4 turns. I think you have a whole team of just pretty much flyers. Drana in the air, and you have like 4 creatures on the field. So
yeah, I'm just curving out with Ravenous Bloodseeker or Heir of Falconwrath. They gave us 2 good aggressive 2-drops across the colors. Curving out with those into the bigger vampires, and of course into things like Incorrigible Youths and Fiery Temper, all that stuff. I mean, you've got the deck is about half built already. That's 4, 8, 12, 16. Yeah, that's 20-24 cards right there, and we haven't seen the whole set yet.
Right.
We will see. We will be getting the entire spoiler a week from Friday, by the way.
Yes,
for people
the 25th.
Who are wondering. So we won't really know what we're going to be working with until then. But you know, the red black madness deck to me has already come together to the point where we're looking for our 25th through 34th cards here, as opposed to where does it start? I mean, you're looking at, you've got 2 2-drops, you've got a 1-drop, you've got a removal spell, you've got Kalidus and Drana as your bigger, higher end on the curve things. Incorrigible Youth is another madness card. So the deck is almost built, and I feel like that's probably where a lot of people are going to start testing for the Pro Tour.
Yep.
Speaking of the Pro Tour, Doug, we haven't actually officially announced on the podcast, I don't think, but we will be going to Pro Tour Shadows of Innistrad.
Yes.
Yes, it is in Spain. Yes, that is far from America. No, they don't speak English there. Yo hablo un poquito español. But we're really stoked. We just got our press passes last week.
Sweet.
And it's really, really cool that we're going to get to see this brand new standard form pan out. And if you are a QS insider, you're going to get the same amazing coverage you got for Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar, yep. where you ideally made a boatload of money, because we were talking about the Eldrazi deck on Friday morning as opposed to Saturday afternoon. But if you are not a QS insider and you are listening to this, first of all, you're listening to this a few days late, so you're getting all this information behind the curve. So sign up so you can solve that problem. But more importantly, the Pro Tour is in about 5 weeks. Meaning that you have 5 weeks to solve the problem of, I'm not a QS insider, so I'm not going to get any awesome updates from the Pro Tour.
Kelly and I will be on site the whole time. It is definitely not a vacation during the Pro Tour.
Oh, you better believe I'm going to hang out in Spain afterwards, though.
Yeah. I mean, just to echo what Kelly and Doug said, I mean, our PT coverage is bar none. I mean, if anyone has been around and listens to these podcasts and has been around during that time of the Pro Tour coverage, insiders, I mean, we were all definitely there making sure the information was free flowing. And we made sure to, you know, put up articles timely, you know, right on the spot, you know, just make sure everyone's getting the information as quickly and promptly as they can. So again, I mean, it's just beneficial to have that information. So you're going to be saving yourself a lot of, heartache and money, obviously, when all these cards start increasing, because everyone is suddenly, you know, scrambling to get these cards because of the demand of Pro Tour. So, and that's really what we're here for. I mean, we want to make sure everyone continues to play Magic the Gathering and make sure they get the best bang for their buck when it comes to this game and this hobby, because it is costly. So
yeah, I mean, we're putting two people on the floor of a European Pro Tour means that you're going to see everything and you're going to know everything.
Right.
The Pro Tour standard rounds will start around, like Doug said, 2 p.m. Madrid time, which is 8 a.m. Eastern time. Madrid is 6 hours ahead of Eastern time,
yeah.
1 hour ahead of GMT,
yeah.
which means that you, if you are on the East Coast, are probably still getting up and straightening your tie for work. If you are on the West Coast like I am, you are probably, hopefully, still very asleep. But regardless of where you are, all you need to do is have your phone with you, and the emails will come in, the notifications will roll in.
Yep. Don't worry,
that will be going. Yeah,
yeah,
so,
and then
we've got you covered.
Yeah, and you got to remember too that you know, that's a work morning for a lot of people, and we talk to people who say, well, you know, it sucks that Twitch is blocked at work, and I can't just park on the stream all day. And a lot of our insiders are really grateful to have emailed updates come through.
That's where people like me come in.
Yeah, and I'll say, like, man, it's really humbling that we're able to do this for our insiders.
Yeah.
I think it's like it's a nice perk to be able to do this, but I'm humbled and I'm awestruck by how our community likes this and is you know, they give us the money to go and cover this.
Right.
And when
it's amazing.
We did Pro Tour Atlanta,
yeah.
I sent out a survey afterward that said, should we do this again? Should we do this in Madrid? Do you think this is a good use of your subscription dollars? And they said, absolutely do it. You got to do this. We love this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on that note, every so often people like to mess with me by asking why we charge, quote, so much for QS. And if you're new to QS, if you're new to this whole thing, our base rate is $12 a month. You can get that down to almost $8 if you sign up for a full year. But the reason we charge that much is because we spend that money on reinvesting in the site. You know, we can't run a business that sends two reporters to a European Pro Tour on $5 a month. You know, you can't, the economics don't work. We charge what we charge because we do things like send two reporters to multiple Pro Tours, domestic or otherwise. And we do that because we feel that we know from experience that there is a market for people who are willing to pay a little bit more to get what is absolutely the best available coverage. And, you know, you can't give that. You can't do the best job while being criminally underfunded and trying to scrape pennies together. So the reason we charge a little bit of a premium is so we can provide a truly premium service and product. I mean, you can call something premium, but if it isn't premium, then people are going to see right through it. So that's why we charge what we charge. And part of the reason we do too is because we have this 111% guarantee. It says if you sign up for QS and you try it for a month and you're just like, man, this was just super not worth the money. I can't believe I wasted my time on this. Like, we'll give you a refund and then we'll actually give you back some interest on it as well. To be blunt, we don't really have to do that very often because our product doesn't suck, but it's there in case you just decide it's not for you. So the only reason I'm being kind of a hard sell today on the podcast is because I'm really excited about Madrid and I want people to really do the math themselves and be like, how much does it cost to send two guys to Europe to do media coverage? You know, we're the only people in the room at the Pro Tour who aren't being paid to be there by somebody else. Everybody at Wizards is getting a paycheck. All the pros are getting, you know, travel comped and they're winning prizes and, you know, appearance fees. We're taking money out of our bank account to go there so we can tweet to you about Eldrazi Mimic and, you know, all that sort of thing. So, that's why I'm harping on it today is because I want people to realize why it is we do what we do. We're not just going for fun. And, I mean, yeah, we are going for fun because it's going to be fun, but that's not the real reason.
Well, we know we're going to have an amazing pro tour. The pros often roll out they save the great stuff for the pro tour. We will have, I think, 2 weeks of Star City tournaments and smaller level stuff before it. But I think this is going to be really exciting. You know, already the Madness deck is shaping up to be a red, black, or straight red Madness deck, shaping up to be looking awesome. So I'm so excited for this set. Guys, what's your favorite card spoiled so far, Kelly?
Oh, man, put me on the spot. My favorite card spoiled so far, let me pick two. I'm going to pick one for raw constructed play and one for my own personal reasons. So for raw constructed play, I like Arlen Cord, the werewolf planeswalker, because she has so many dimensions and so many intertwining lines of play. It's a real thinking man's card, and I fancy myself one of those. So I'm looking forward to figuring out how to play with this card. For my own reasons, I'm just so glad they reprinted Fiery Temper, because I remember when they printed that the first time, in Torment, I was playing a lot during then, and I remember when they reprinted it in Time Spiral, wasn't playing as much then. But man, I am really excited to cast Lightning Bolt in Standard again.
How about you, Chaz? What's your favorite?
I think I have to second the choice of Arlen Cord, and then I'm going with Heir of Falkenrath. Card's ridiculously good.
I like that as an option too. And you know, I'm looking back through the older spoilers too. Lightning Axe is getting reprinted. I'm even thinking like, back to, the previous set, the Merfolk Ruin Diver, the, red blue one, Ruin Diver. I forget his proper name.
Jory N.
Thank you. You could conceivably activate his ability pretty quickly by casting two spells in a turn if you know that you're getting madness discounts on things, and that helps feed it. So I like that. My favorite card so far is Magnifying Glass, because that's just the kind of player I am. I'm hoping that it has some pretty awesome support and we have reasons for playing that thing and activating it. So we got a lot of great stuff this week. You know, we could very well get a lot of other great stuff next week, and you should stick around, tune in to us again, and if there's cool stuff next week, we'll talk about it. And until then, I'm Doug.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
And thanks for listening to QS Cast.